Okay, today is June 29th, 2011, and my name is Mark Madison at the National Conservation Training Center. And this week we're having a conference for bright high school kids from around the country who might want to pursue environmental careers called the Student Climate and Conservation Congress. And one of our speakers this morning was Dr. John Francis, who's had an extremely interesting career and has been kind enough to come downstairs and talk with us a little bit for this podcast. Let me just tell you a little about Dr. Francis. Dr. Francis was energized in his 20s when the 1971 oil spill in San Francisco Bay jarred his comfortable life. As he joined volunteers to help scrub the beaches and save the birds there, he felt the need to make a deeper, more personal commitment to the environment, and boy, did he ever. He decided to stop using motorized vehicles and eventually took a vow of silence. He stopped using motorized vehicles for 22 years, is that correct, Dr. Francis? And he stopped talking and only listened for 17 years, which is kind of an inspiration to us all. So, Dr. Francis, thank you so much for coming to Shepherdstown.
Well, thanks, Mark. And, you know, as I said, thanks for being here. Because it takes two to communicate, you know?
Yeah, it does. Right. I'm sure that's a lesson you learned from your 17 years of silence. Tell us why you made these two decisions to stop using motorized transport and stop talking.
Well, you know, the not riding in motorized vehicles, it seemed kind of obvious. It's a connection that I had made when looking at an oil spill and looking at myself driving a motor vehicle and realizing that the reason they were in the bay with the oil was partly because of the demand that I was part of to have them there to get oil cheaply as they could and as quickly as they could for my use. And so that was an easy no-brainer, as they say, to make that choice to start walking. The not talking was a little more difficult for me because I had looked at the practice of remaining silent in my earlier life as a religious person, going in the monastery, and I said, oh, that's not for me. Yeah. I'm not talking, come on. But because I was in so many arguments about the decision not to ride in motorized vehicles, when people in my community mentioned that I really wouldn't make a difference, one person couldn't make a difference, I decided on my 27th birthday to remain silent for one day. And it was that one day that I learned that I hadn't been listening. And so I listened a little more. And then I realized that it was even more profound than just listening. It was being able to tell the truth. It was being able to recognize the truth and a lot of other things that came from the silence. And discovering who I was as a person, as a African American, was paramount, and so I took that vow to be silent for a year, which I renewed every year. And it's great to be here in Shepherdstown because the students here are just so bright and are so committed already in what they're doing. I applaud you on being able to find such students, and it's almost like preaching to the choir, except, you know, this is a very young choir, and they are looking for direction, and they're looking for inspiration from all of us. And to have that opportunity to speak with them and touch them and be touched by them and to listen to them is a great opportunity for me.
Well, you were very inspiring, and the students had a lot of questions. We could have gone 3 hours with their questions. We had to cut them off. Mm-hmm. But I wonder what you think. You know, you made your choice to stop riding motorized vehicles and to stop talking. Do you think that's a choice they should make, or do you think they ought to find their own voice, no pun intended, to speak out on these issues?
I won't take that as a pun. But, you know, I try to keep from saying what it is that a person's journey is, because I don't know. And that is something that we have to discover for ourselves. I do say that being who you are and discovering that person and being that person is probably the most powerful thing that you can do for all of us. And so I unreservedly will recommend. Now, some students ask me about walking, if they should walk or if they could walk, and I get lots of emails from people around the country who want to walk. And so what I will say, and what I'm trying to come up with, is a way that instead of going to some far off land or Europe or to kick around for a year and find yourself, that maybe in your own community you can become a planet walker and just give up riding in motorized vehicles and walk. And I don't know if you want to stop talking, but I mean, that's a possibility. I don't think that it's something that you'll suffer. I think it's something that would be a great learning experience for you, just as maybe going to some European country and kicking around for a year or two. But it's something that you can do right here at home, and I think it has measurable benefits. You can lower your carbon footprint, and you will definitely affect your family's lives and the lives of your friends and the community, I believe.
An internal journey versus an external.
Yes, it is, yes.
Now, people might be surprised that when you were not riding motorized vehicles and not talking, you were not limiting yourself to a small geographic area or a small career path. Tell us some of the things you did during those years. Because I think it's amazing, actually.
I did get around.
Yes, you did.
I walked up to, from California, from near San Francisco, Point Reyes, about 500 miles every year to visit the Kamiopsis Wilderness. And it's not one of those grand, wildernesses like you can find up in northern Washington, the Pusaten, really lots of views and mountains. It's this kind of low elevation canyons and rattlesnakes and hornets and things like that. But it's nature nonetheless, and I spent a lot of time there, and then I'd walk back in the fall. And I do that, and eventually was befriended by a gold miner there, and lived with a gold miner, Perry Davis, and his wife Ruth, for a winter, and then came out and went to school at Southern Oregon State College. From there, I returned to the Bay Area, apprenticed as a wooden boat builder, founded Planet Walk, started walking around the world as part of my education, and I hoped that I could benefit all of us, but figuring I'd figure that out along the way. Went to Missoula, Montana, and did a master's in environmental studies there, and then on across the country to Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin, where I did my PhD in oil spills, and ended up working at the Coast Guard writing oil pollution regulations for the United States. And from there, I sailed through the Caribbean and then walked the length of South America. I started talking, though, in the East Coast of the United States in 1990. So, and now I'm headed back to Madison, Wisconsin, to be a visiting professor there at the Gaylord Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies to teach redefining environment. And environment for me now has changed from just being about pollution and just being about climate change and the loss of species and habitats and things that we traditionally think of as environment, but to also have to include the human environment, because we're part of the environment, and as being part of the environment, it's our first opportunity to treat the environment in a sustainable way, or even to understand what sustainability is in the relationships that we have with ourselves and each other. So it's a human rights and civil rights and economic equity and gender equality, and pretty much all the ways that we relate to one another that environment has to embrace in order to be effective. Because as we do all the work that we're doing, we really wanted to make a difference. And I think that we begin by making that difference in our own personal lives, with our relationships with each other.
Sounds perfect. It's very a nicely Playing the Circle that year at the Nelson Institute, because Gaylord Nelson obviously was the founder of Earth Day. He was very interested in getting humans incorporated into the environment. He was actually the first speaker we had out at this place shortly after we opened.
Wow.
Was Senator Nelson when he was still alive. He was a family friend, and I think he'd be very thrilled that you're coming back to Wisconsin to help make these connections.
I would hope so, and of course, you know, Aldo Leopold is at Wisconsin, and John Muir is at Wisconsin, and so I guess it's a great magnet for
breeding ground for conservationists.
Breeding ground for conservationists and activists.
John, this has been a very short podcast, and you know, you have had a fascinating life, and we just touched on a few episodes of it. Are there books or websites people could go to learn more about Planet Walk and your career?
Well, we have a website, planetwalk.org, and that's our nonprofit website, but also National Geographic. I'm a fellow at National Geographic, and I hope this podcast is heard on that website as well. It has an enormous reach, but National Geographic has also published two books, Planet Walker, which will be made into a motion picture at some point, and The Ragged Edge of Silence, Finding Peace in a Noisy World, which just came out in March. So, yeah, you can get those at your bookstore or the National Geographic website.
That sounds good. Do you have one take-home message for folks that are listening?
Well, the take-home message for me, I think I said it before, but please take this to heart and take it home. The environment is about how we treat each other. Let's treat each other well.
Thank you, John. This has been Dr. John Francis at the Student Climate and Conservation Congress for 2011, and he's just joining us for a brief broadcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark.